Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, pain can be a tricky thing to measure or to compare, yet numerous studies have found that when a woman presents with pain, it is all too often not taken as seriously. Something Rachel Champ knows too well. She suffered from debilitating menstrual pain since she was 10 years of age, and time after time, she's been told it's just normal, or in some cases, dismissed altogether. She joins us now on News Talk. Afternoon, Rachel.
Hi.
So how long have you been experiencing really severe period pains?
Since I got my very first period when I was 10.
Oh my God.
And I'm now 27.
Yeah, and I suppose the first assumption people might make is endometriosis. Not that though.
It's kind of unclear at the moment. Where it's still not 100% ruled out because it is really hard to diagnose. I think at the moment in Ireland, it takes like 9 years for a woman to get a diagnosis of endometriosis from when they first go and see a gynecologist. So it's really difficult. And especially I think like wait times and stuff at the moment. So it hasn't been 100% ruled out, but it's probably leaning towards that or something similar called adenomyosis.
Right. Okay. And so when did you first start seeing consultants about this? And at the start, what were they saying to you?
So I first started going to my GP when I was 11, because my mom was like, no, like the pain that you're in, it's not normal. You shouldn't be in that amount of pain. Like I was missing, at the time I was in primary school, like, and I was missing school every month because of the pain I was in. And like growing up, I was just told like by my GP, it's normal. Like, you know, everyone gets period pains. You're just one of the unlucky ones to get, you know, bad period pains, but there's nothing to worry about. It wasn't until I turned 25 and I saw a different GP altogether because I was getting my first smear test done. And, you know, she kind of asked me like about my history and all that. We went through everything that she was like, no, this shouldn't be happening. You need to go see a gynecologist. So I only had my first gynecology appointment when I turned 25.
My word. And in the meantime, you know, up to the point you were 25, did no one prescribe anything for you, the pill or any of those kind of often?
I had tried the pill. I had tried different types of the pill. We went through about four different types of the pill between, like, I started on the pill when I was 12, which is obviously a really young age to start on it, but that's the time I started. And by the time from 12 to 25, I had tried four different types of the pill. None of them helped. The pain was just getting worse, was lasting longer. I was getting more symptoms than just pain as well. Like, it was getting to a point where I literally just couldn't get out of bed. Like the pain was so severe coming down my legs and my lower back that I can't get out of bed for 2 or 3 days a month, and it was just getting worse and worse. And that's why that GP was like, no, you need to see a gynecologist. So I had tried a couple of things before even going and seeing a gynecologist, but I had just been told up to that point that it was just normal period pains. It was just part of, you know, being a woman, which I obviously learned as I got older then, and seeing like other people, like, and like my friends and family, like, you know, seeing them and that they didn't have the same problems I had.
Mm, that's were all the GPs men?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you did eventually get to see a gynecologist. And what did the first gynecologist say to you?
So the first gynecologist I saw, like, I thought he was really nice, like, from the first appointment. And he'd said, yeah, like, it's definitely something we need to look into. He wanted to do surgery and try me on the Mirena coil. And we did that a couple of months after I first saw him. So I had a surgery in, I think it was like October 2020. And after the surgery, he basically told me, he was like, no, everything's fine, there's nothing wrong with you, your surgery was clear. It basically told me again, like, it's just normal period pains, you're just unlucky. And I ended up back in the hospital twice after that surgery, one a week later and then 2 weeks after that, because I had an infection from getting the coil put in and I had two cysts rupture 2 weeks later. And he was called in. I was told by the doctor in A&E that I'd need to have surgery for the cyst, because one of the cysts hadn't ruptured, but they wanted to remove it, and the other one had ruptured. So they're like, we just want to get you into surgery and get it done. But he came in, the gynecologist was called in then, and he saw me and discharged me within 5 minutes, sent me home with painkillers, and said, I just had bad period pains. The coil would fix everything. I had to give the coil 6 months to settle in, and he would see me in 6 months' time if I was still in pain. And just basically was really dismissive, like, you know, it's not actually anything wrong with you. Go home, basically. So I ended up being referred back to the hospital's gynecology department by my GP last year because the pain was just still going on. And I specifically asked, I said, I don't want to see this gynecologist. You know, I didn't find him really helpful. He was really dismissive towards me, and they assured me I wouldn't see him. But when my appointment was delayed a couple of times, obviously with COVID and the cyber attack and stuff, like, that's obviously out of their control. But when I eventually was brought in and had my face-to-face appointment, which was a month ago, I ended up seeing him, even though I'd asked not to see him and they told me I wouldn't. And again, he had just been, I had spoken to three other female gynecologists on like phone appointments from the gynecology team, and they had come up, they were all in agreement about a plan, what was the next course of action. And he came in and said, no, we're not trying that. That's not going to work for you. You need to try acupuncture and try another type of birth control and come back and see me in 6 months' time.
Did you get the sense, perhaps, that some people were implying that this might be all in your head?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I sat in front of him, and I've told him before, you know, like, I ended up in tears, like, explaining how much of an impact this has on me. Like, every month it stops me working, it stops me, you know, doing things like with family and friends. Like, it the pain is really severe, and it's only getting worse as I'm getting older. And it just kind of has that feeling of like, oh, it's just a woman saying, like, you know, it's normal, like, you just have to get on with it. But I don't think it's normal to be in that amount of pain every month.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's getting worse, like, it's definitely not normal.
And so the idea, Rachel, of getting a hysterectomy, was that, how did you learn that might be a possible solution?
So because I've had so many problems for so long, like, I've obviously done a lot of reading into, like, you know, what can be causing it and, you know, what treatments are available. And by all standards on the HSE, you know, when it comes to these sort of problems, I have tried all of the less invasive treatments. Like, I've tried the birth control, I've tried the coil, I've tried all the painkillers. So I'm running out of options and what's actually left to treat it. And I know that if it is endometriosis, a hysterectomy doesn't cure endometriosis. But I had asked him, you know, if he's ruling out, if he's saying it's not endometriosis, what is the next step? Like, when will we start looking at the invasive options? Like, at what point will a hysterectomy be considered, if it is going to be considered? And he flat out told me straight away that he has never done a hysterectomy on someone my age, and he never will. And I expected that, you know, I went in there with the expectation that if I brought up a hysterectomy, I would be told I'm too young to make that decision. He actually told me that I can't make that decision because the pain is clouding my judgment. So I'm not in the right frame of mind to make that decision right now. My wife was with me in the room, like, she was there for the appointment, and she asked him, okay, like, if she's too young now, what age does she have to be for you to consider her not too young? Like, are we talking, does she have to get to 30 or 35? And it was at that point he said, oh no, it's not just the age that we consider, you know, we'd actually consider a few other factors. And we asked what factors, and he said that he wouldn't want me to have any regrets, you know, if I had a hysterectomy, you know, in the future and my life circumstances change, like if my sexual orientation changes, if I leave my partner, if I meet someone else and he decides he wants to have children. That was what I was told.
How did the two of you react to that?
We both kind of, I think both of us were just silent for a couple of seconds, and what I kind of sank in. And the only thing I could think to say was like, you know, you're a doctor, you should know, like, sexual orientation doesn't change. Like, I'm aware you could argue that me and my wife aren't going to stay together, like, that we could get divorced. You can argue that. But regardless, I'm not going to change my sexual orientation and decide I want to marry a man. Like, that's not going to happen. So it was really disheartening to have that. And, you know, I have utmost respect for doctors and consultants. Like, and if I was given a medical reason as to why it wouldn't be a possibility, you know, if I was told there's risks, I know there's risks involved, like with osteoporosis and stuff like that. Like, and if that was kind of put to me, but the fact that it was his own biases, you know, about, I guess, you know, about being gay, and that it's not, you know, and that women have to be able to have children, and I'm too young to make decisions regarding my own body. Like, it was his own biases that were making judgments on my medical treatment, and basically happy enough to leave me in pain continually in case I meet a man and decide I want to have children.
I don't know why the decision to have children is contingent upon you changing your sexuality anyway. One could make a legitimate point that you and your wife might decide to have kids later on and then go, oh, that's a shame.
But that was something we kind of said, you know, like, if we do decide to have children, given my history and the problems that I have, it's not going to be me that's going to carry. Like, it wouldn't make sense for us to do that. So I would much rather have no pain and be able to, like, live a normal life again. But that just wasn't, and at that point I just kind of knew that there was no room for argument, there was no room for discussion with him, and I honestly left there defeated. As soon as the door closed behind me and my wife, the two of us just burst into tears out of, like, frustration and just upset that once again, like, I'm being dismissed and just left in, basically just left on my own to try and deal with this.
And in this day and age, in 2021, it's astounding that somebody would come up with an opinion like that.
Yeah, I think that's why it kind of took us. I would love to go back and do that appointment again now, having some time away to let everything sink in. But at the time, it was really just like, it took us both by surprise, and neither of us kind of knew exactly what to say. Like, it didn't sink in at the time what was actually being said. But at this point now, like, I ended up in A&E last week because of severe pain, and I try and stay away from A&E, but my GP sent me, she said, you know, you need to go and get seen, like, it's really bad. And I was told that A&E isn't a place for someone with chronic pain. The doctor said, she's like, I know you're in pain, but at least you're alive, is what I was told. And even though I explained, I can't work at the moment, I can't walk, every time I breathe, it hurts. And I was, again, just sent home with painkillers. So even from that point of view, like, I can't even go to A&E and try and get help, like, with the pain that I'm in. So
there's nothing much they can do for you. I mean, the painkillers, I assume the kind of painkillers you could get in the chemists anyway.
Yeah. I had stronger painkillers at home than what they gave me when I was in the hospital with pain. They gave me paracetamol when I was in the hospital.
So you are going to see a specialist in London, though?
Yes. I tweeted about what happened, and it kind of blew up. Like, I got like 500,000 likes on it. And what surprised me the most was the amount of Irish women who reached out to me, who found me on Facebook or Instagram and messaged me, and they had similar stories. Like, even like some women telling me stories that happened to them like 20 years ago, and like women that had recent stories. And it was actually, I had a couple of women reach out to me about this particular specialist in London, that when they couldn't get help in Ireland, they went to see him, and he was amazing. So I've gone and made an appointment with him. I see him 2 weeks tomorrow, but it leaves me in a position, obviously, where I have to leave Ireland to get medical treatment, and I have to pay for everything out of pocket, because obviously with Brexit now, none of it is covered by health insurance. But that's the position that I've been left in, because I can't get help here. Like, it's been 17 years and my pain is getting worse, but I'm not getting any treatment.
Well, Rachel, we really hope you get the help that you need. Rachel Cham, thanks a million for speaking with us today.
Thanks so much.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.